Welcome to the English with Kirsty podcast from englishwithkirsty.com. I'm Kirsty, and I support multilingual professionals to discover their voice in English. On the podcast, we talk about language, learning, and intentional communication. We hear about my guests' language journeys and share tips that help you communicate in a way that makes sense and sounds like you. Welcome back to the English with Kirsty podcast. And we have a new guest for you today. So Christina, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me. This is actually my very first podcast episode ever. And I'm so happy that it is with you because I really appreciate you as a professional and fellow polyglot. So thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah, we're going to have fun. A lot of people say that it's their first time and then they go on to do more, which is always a good sign that I didn't, that I made it a good experience for them. So
you didn't scare us off.
No, I haven't yet, but I'm not going to scare you off either. So let's find out who you are then, because I know who you are. Do you want to tell the audience something about you and your relationship with languages? Because you mentioned being a polyglot. I know of, well, I speak three of your languages. There are more. So let's find out something about them.
So actually, I was anticipating this question and I was like wondering, because I think that when somebody asks us, you know, like, who are you? We tend to respond using our job title, right? Or like, I'm an English teacher, or I'm like a doctor, whatever, and then your name, right? So I was thinking, sure, professionally, I'm a language identity coach, a neuro-language coach, English teacher. And personally, I would say I'm a linguist, a polyglot, as I mentioned, a language nerd. I'm a cat lover as well. I love improv theater. And I'm deeply fascinated by human communication, you know, the human mind. So, yeah, I guess that would be a good description.
Yeah, so we have a lot to talk about because I'm interested in a lot of those topics too. I think we have material for more than one podcast episode, but let's start with your languages. So when did you start being interested in languages other than your first language? Like what drew you to them?
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay. I have to like start in my childhood, of course. English was, of course, like my very first love. And as I like to call it, was like, I don't know, like it was like the language of my newly found identity and self-expression and authenticity, because growing up in Romania, it was kind of like difficult for me to really express my thoughts. The environment that I was living in was very, you know, like conservative, especially my mom. So I started like using English so I can kind of like express myself in writing. And I was doing journaling, you know, I had my diary and I wrote everything in English. And that's how it started. And then, you know, like it went on with Cartoon Network and then American TV shows and movies later. Then when I was a teenager, I always like spoke with my friends, half Romanian, half English, you know, like, so it was like a really big part of my identity. That's why, you know, I finally, after so many years, I've kind of found my mission, so to say.
Okay, so you didn't go to an English speaking country first though when you worked the first time. So how did that happen?
No.
How did you become interested in Germany then? Because you studied English and then you went to Germany. How did that happen?
Okay. So like every language, like I feel like every language that I've started learning was connected to like a kind of like a shift in my life, in my reality. So with German, it was because I'd met, you know, my very first boyfriend online.
Ah.
And well, we broke up before I even like moved to Germany. But the thing is, like, I like, for me, it was like a door, like a new, you know, like opportunity, because I wanted to finally kind of escape my environment here in Romania. And I really love the language, you know, and I don't know, like I consider Munich, for example, my adoptive hometown. And my German identity is also like very strong. I've adopted a lot of positive values, I would say, punctuality being also one of them.
Yeah, you were here before I was this morning. So yeah. But
Yeah,
no,
I was
that's
just like thinking about it because I'm like, oh my God, I'm so German. 6 minutes, you know, like before. And when I came back, when I moved back to Romania, actually, after 12 years, I had to readjust and be less punctual. So it's really interesting.
And it's also interesting how, like, for me, German, no, because that was one of my school languages. We had to, well, we started with French, which I didn't continue with, and then
Oh,
German was.
yeah.
But for the other languages
French.
and the ones that I've abandoned since, there's always been like somebody. For me, it's been linked to a person, but then sometimes that friendship or whatever doesn't continue, but the language does. I remember, I didn't fall out with them, but like some of the people I originally sp started speaking Romanian with, or who got me interested in it, we're still friends, but you know, like we're not. I very rarely speak to them now, and it's interesting how like somebody gets your attention and then it carries on. Somebody we had a guest on the podcast. She's a Portuguese teacher, and she was saying that you know sometimes people start learning because of a relationship, and then that relationship ends, and then but they still want to know because they like the culture, the language, the country. And so it's like there can be a catalyst, but it doesn't mean that your interest in the language is dependent on that person. It sounds like that happened with you in German, that you know you got interested because of someone, and then you made it your own. You made it part of who you are. And Spanish too, so like your Spanish identity came later.
My Mexican Spanish, I have to like correct you there.
Sorry.
No, I'm kidding. No, but it is kind of like different, right? If you think about like the Spanish from Spain culture and Mexican culture. And there, I have to say again, television, particularly telenovelas or like Mexican Spanish soap operas, were guilty for my let's say immersion into the Mexican culture. I remember that I was like probably I think it was primary school, to be honest. Like, I think I was maybe like in the fifth grade or sixth grade. I actually called my mom and asked her about it. And she was like, yeah, in probably fifth, sixth grade. And like for 3 or 4 years, I was watching multiple telenovelas. And it was like running in the background while I was doing my homework, you know. And I like to joke about the fact that, but it's not really a joke, to be honest, that on the one hand, right, like I passively learned Spanish, Mexican Spanish. Like I could understand 99% of Spanish speaking people, let's say, well, maybe not s specific slang. But on the other hand, it completely distorted my idea of a healthy relationship and
Life.
love, right? And then
Okay,
life, but like
yeah.
love in particular, you know, like, and I did end up having my Mexican telenovela, which was very interesting, and I learned a lot about myself, to be honest. So yeah, languages have always like accompanied me, you know, like in life with different people, different contexts, and I feel like I discovered a different part of myself each time.
So how does that work in, like, did you have, is it not dubbed in Romania? It's with subtitles, or you just had the Spanish, or?
Okay, back then, I'm not sure, like right now, because I don't watch TV. I haven't watched TV in, I don't know, more than 15 years, I guess. But back then, yeah, it was like it had subtitles. Everything was in the
Okay.
original language with subtitles.
Okay, so lots of language adventures, and
Yeah,
I was
you're
intrigued
right.
by this because you on your LinkedIn profile it said language identity coach, and I was just wondering if you could explain what that means. Like, what is a language identity and what is a language identity coach? What is, how does that work?
Of course. So language identity is kind of like the relationship that you have, like between like a certain language and your sense of self in it. Yeah. So like how you feel, in that language, if you can feel like you can fully express your authentic self or not. So it basically includes your idiolect, which is, you know, your unique way of using the language. Your personality, you know, like your confidence, your communication patterns, etc. And also like maybe how other people see you, right? Your social positioning, because that affects us as well as much as we would like to think that the most important is how we feel on the inside, we live in a society, right? So that part is also important. And of course, like this came from the fact that I have had a perpetual identity crisis from the beginning of of my life, you know, because I was like, I don't feel like I belong in Romania. I kind of like rejected my Romanian identity. And then I was like, you know, like I wanted to sound as native as possible in English, but I realized that after you pass that critical period, that is practically impossible for an adult to hear those pronunciation nuances, right? And I didn't feel like I belonged there either, because an American speaker can automatically tell that I'm not from there, right? And then in German, every time like people ask me, like, where are you from? I was like, yes. They said Russia, right? So I was like, oh no. So I kind of like felt like very, you know, like fragmented in a way. And I felt like I didn't know who I was, where I belonged. And then I realized that actually I have a very colorful identity, and I have like different parts of myself that I can express maybe better in one language than another. So it's actually kind of a superpower, right? So that was like, because I started working a lot on my mindset. And I thought about the fact that it took me like 6 years to finally kind of like be on the other side of that mindset, right? And I wouldn't have seen it unless I consciously started working on it, right? And I think a lot of people are in that situation. They don't know what the problem is. They just notice something feels off, that they feel uncomfortable or not good enough. And that's why I was like, oh my God, I wish I, you know, like I'd had somebody to help me kind of like solve that problem faster, right? And kind of like, this is what I'm trying to create, right? With my program and language identity coaching, by the way, I will probably try to trademark it in the future, right? But it is kind of like my own, so to say, like my baby. And right now I am in the process of creating that program, right? So it's still growing.
I'm interested because, I mean, I can see that there are definitely challenges that we have to, well, we can choose to resolve in terms of not rejecting parts of ourselves. But maybe it's like an ongoing journey as well, because do you ever, you know, like every year we're discovering new things as maybe our identity changes and our relationship with the languages change. So it's like it's an ongoing story, but it's having somebody to be with you for the first part of that journey to discover.
Yeah, to hold your hand and to guide you, because like I feel like the first step is the hardest, right? Like I was like so terrified of like, for example, posting content online, like especially videos, right? And if your brain doesn't like see that because it's never done it before, right? Like it doesn't see that even as an option, and it only like, of course, to protect you, it only sees like the worst outcome. And you just like make up like all of these like terrible scenarios in your head. And then once you do it, you're like, oh my God, what? Like, I can't believe like I was so afraid of this. I'm like, it's not the end of the world. Oh yeah, I got a hate comment. So, you know, but that wouldn't have been possible for me like a few years back, you know, because I was like so terrified. Like I was like, every time I tried to do something about it, I froze and I postponed it and I forgot about it, right? And I think it's also because people don't really talk about it so openly. I mean, there are a few people, I've seen some people starting to talk about it, but it's not really, you know, the majority. And that was also like very kind of like scary for me, because I am kind of like starting to talk about topics that are a little bit more controversial, let's say. But yeah, I think it's important, and I've decided that I have to like just follow, as I said, like my mission in life and try to help other people feel better about, you know, like those things, because they don't have to be stuck as long as I was stuck, right?
Yeah, and I think sometimes we don't have the tools to deal with certain things that come up because they don't come up for us in our first language. Like I was thinking the first time I went to Germany, I was very, everything I'd done before, apart from at school, so after school, it kind of changed me. And I was very involved in, I was doing volunteering in an online project, and everything we did was written. So I had quite a lot of practice writing, and I was quite outspoken with what I, you know, I could express myself quite well in writing, but we didn't speak. And then we did. I went to Germany, and okay. I was treated, not by everyone, there were some really nice people there, but I had some experiences in that first time of being there with other people trying to work in German, where people didn't treat me as, not just that they didn't treat me well, but nobody ever treated me like that in English before. Like, because I was suddenly being this quiet person or not standing up for myself in the way that I would in English because I didn't have the courage to do it. And so I also didn't have the tools to deal with that because it was something that had never happened. People do not do that in English because I don't present myself like that in English. And I think sometimes, we can learn to deal with the situations around us, but when we have situations in our additional languages that we don't have in our first language, it can be really hard to know what to do about them because it's completely new. And to be fair, it's not really representative of who we are because we take on this other these characteristics that don't really belong to us. And I guess it's about understanding your identity. It's also about trying to not adopt behavior patterns that don't really belong to us because they might feel more safe or easier
Yeah, no,
to cope.
and honestly, like, so like what you're saying is that you kind of like did a bit of exposure therapy, right? Like you put yourself in that situation and you did learn from it, right? Like it was probably frustrating. It was I don't know, like annoying. It made you probably feel rejected or like you didn't belong, right? But at the same time,
I
had you
was
not
super
had that
angry, actually. I was like,
situation,
how dare you speak to
really?
me like that? But I didn't know how to be that forceful
But that's the thing,
in
like, had you not been in that situation, you probably would understand your learners way less, right? Because now you understand how it felt like to be on the other side, right? So I think that's also like very, very important. And oh, I wanted to ask you, so can you please like tell me again, because like I think you mentioned it, but I'm sorry. So like why did you choose Romanian? Because like to me, like I was like super impressed by the fact that you speak Romanian, not just speak it, but you speak it fluently and you understand everything. Because as you know, it's very rare that people learn Romanian just because, so I haven't met a lot of non-native speakers of Romanian, to be honest.
I
You're my
haven't
very
met any
first.
that aren't living there. I know one or two now, but I was feeling quite, I guess, isolated during the lockdown. I was still working and I wasn't on my own, but I wanted more human contact than I was getting. And I thought it would be nice to channel some of that energy and motivation to do something useful into learning a new language, but I wanted one that was a bit different. I've always been drawn to, because I studied Turkish for a while and then Hindi before that. I don't use those languages now, but I've always been interested in maybe not the ones that were offered at school or evening classes. And then I didn't know what to do. I was still thinking about my options and I went to a networking meeting in English, but it was organized by someone from Romania and there were a few other Romanian people there. And they were the first people that really made me feel welcome and were nice to me. And I thought, oh, well, that's nice to feel, because I was the new girl. It's nice to feel welcome. And then I thought, okay, well, I know nothing about this country. I know nothing about this language. Maybe that would be a good project for my lockdown time. And
So
then,
see, it was because you had a positive experience, right? So like
yeah.
it's so important, and we don't really talk about it, but it's so important to have a positive attitude towards the language that you're learning. And I have had a lot of like students or coaches who are actually like, oh, I don't like it, like, and I don't want to learn about the like the American culture or about this culture, right? And I feel like that is also important. Like, I'm not saying that you should learn about a specific culture, but if you don't like a language, then what's the point in learning it? And I'm guessing, yeah, sure. Some people are forced by work, right? Like their company probably forces them to use the language, and that's also like very important because it does slow down your progress. That's why, again, like the element of coaching is so important in language teaching, right? Because then you can go a little bit deeper. To understand, or like to at least like, I don't know, like let's say that the person doesn't like it and will never like it. Okay, then what can we do to at least make the process pleasant for you? Like so you can actually get something out of it.
I've spent time talking with people about, I don't know, their football team. I hate football. I do not enjoy the topic, but I
Me
don't hate it. I just have nothing.
neither.
I find it kind of, I'm going to alienate half my audience now, but it's not something I enjoy. But I had somebody, one of my clients, who really liked it and followed his team around the world. And so, like, I don't, he wasn't negative about English, but he didn't love speaking English. And but then we, if I got him talking about, okay, so what happened with your team at the weekend, or like,
Exactly,
I
yeah.
think you're right, but I think it's also about trying to say, well, not denying the experiences that we've had, because that doesn't help. But also, like, I know that a lot of my students didn't have great experiences with English at school. I don't know how it was for you, but they had teachers that weren't very engaged, or that didn't explain things in a way that really made sense, or they had to do things that were boring, or they had to do grammar sheets and grammar sheets, and that was all. And whatever it was, I know there are some really good school teachers out. I'm not bashing them, but I have had people who have come to me because they said that their experience of learning English in an educational setting wasn't a fun one. And I guess it's about saying, well, we can't change what happened, but we can change our approach to it now. I guess it's like trying to find some more positive links to a language. And if you have to learn it for work or something like that, you can't really get around that. So you may as well have fun, because you're going to learn more
Yeah,
if you do.
exactly. And I wanted to mention that in my time at school, they only used the grammar translation method, right? So it was only and we were just like reading and doing conjugation or grammar. And I think you mentioned something about French. I had 11 years of French at school. After I finished school, do you think I was able to have a conversation in French? No, but was I able to sing Alouette? And later I found out that that song is actually like very cruel to poor Alouette.
Oh,
You've never heard it?
I've
So it's
never.
like Alouette, je te plumerai. And that basically means that you're gonna remove its feathers, right? From the face, from the eyes, from I was like, oh my,
Because
this
you're going to
was what I
eat.
was singing. I'm not sure. I didn't really mention, I think, if it was like for food or not. But anyway, and that's like that's exactly like the problem. And I think in many countries, this is still like the regular, teaching method that is used, right? Because I guess if you think about it, right, you have to correct like a lot of papers, right? It's a bit like mass production. So you have to do something more superficial so you can cover, let's say, like more surface, right? But I'm like, what is the point of that? Because if that's how you teach 30 people, then they're not going to be able to speak that language. So what's the point? Just so that they are aware of like certain words or vocabulary, especially in Romania, this is like still very present. Where like I have a friend, he is actually Mexican, and he's right now like taking Romanian classes at the university. It's called the Romanian preparatory year, and he's very frustrated because like they're spending like six to eight hours a day. And it's just like a lot of information, nobody can remember that. Each day it's a different grammar topic, so they don't even know how to use let's say like the topic that they did on Monday, and they're already like doing another topic on Tuesday, and
So
it's
it's
a
not
lot of
reinforcing it,
information
it's not
and
practicing
nobody's
it.
explaining anything, and they're doing it in Romanian. They're doing everything in Romanian. Imagine, learning kind of like grammar topics, like complex grammar topics in Romanian when you have zero knowledge of Romanian, right? And they're not interested in you speaking the language at the end. They're just interested in you passing your exams. That's it. It's just about the grades. It's not about like you actually having that skill at the end.
Actually, I had all
So.
my grammar taught in Romanian because I insisted on it, but I guess I had the vocabulary. I'd built some vocabulary before I went to the classes
And you
to
said
do
you had
that.
about seven teachers, right? So like you did have a lot of conversation, right? So that's like he doesn't have that. He just hears like one teacher speaking for like 6 hours every day,
Yeah,
and
and not speaking himself then, because if you got, I had
yeah, no,
friends from a
not at all.
very like early on, and to be honest, yeah, I do. For my, if they want it, and if I speak the language, I will explain grammar in German, with my clients, because they want it, or it makes more sense. The more important thing is that they understand. And there are different ideas about that. I think if you've got a mixed class, then it's not fair. I have a couple of groups where I only speak the language of one person in that group, and then it wouldn't be fair if I kept speaking with her. But if you have another common language, then I really don't see the problem, if as long as people don't do it too much to the point where it's not giving the people the chance to practice. But you're right, if people don't understand what they're doing, they're not going to learn a language. And if people don't have the chance to practice what they are learning, and if they're just being talked at, they're also not going to learn, which
And
is the
6 hours is way too long. Like, you cannot focus for that long. That's like your brain is like totally overwhelmed. You know, like you're like it's a huge cognitive load. You're like you can't even like focus anymore. You don't even know what's happening.
you're too exhausted when you finish to go and have a conversation with a
Yeah.
friend because you're, yeah. So let's think about tips that we could share with other people. Do you have any in terms of like, because people, many people will never have thought about this idea of their identities in each language. So what tips could you give to somebody who is kind of hadn't thought about this before, and to maybe kind of at least befriend these other parts of themselves, or how to start working and understanding themselves better? What are there any like simple exercises that people could start with, or just one a tip or something that you could suggest to them?
Okay, so like, well, I would say like, first of all, they need to become aware of certain things, because if they are not aware of like their importance, it's going to be very hard to kind of like integrate English into your identity or daily life if you just see it as a tool, right? So I would say first step is awareness. Then, and I've actually like started a video series where I kind of like give tips on how to make English part of your identity and part of your daily life. So depending on what your hobbies are or your daily activities, my suggestion is like to make it part of that, you know, like of your daily life, and to make it fun and easy and playful. And definitely it's very important to have conversations. So a lot of my coaches, you know, tell me, oh, but I don't have time, like, because they do have a very limited amount of time, right? They go to work maybe 8 to 9 hours, then they have, you know, like some time with their families. Unfortunately, I haven't really managed to convince them to start speaking English to their families.
And
But they
people will
could, like,
go
you know,
to
like,
any lengths to not speak English with their kids because they're like, no, my kids, no more English. And then they refuse. But yeah, okay, it can
but
be
no, but
that.
like, but they could, for example, like watch a movie in English with the whole
Yeah.
family, right? But like in the end, it is really about like how motivated are you to do this, right? Like, how much do you want this? You know, because if you don't really want it, if you feel like, no, this is not something that I want to make part of my identity, then it's not gonna work, right? So you have to want this to happen. And as I said, like, I understand that some people don't have who to talk to, although there are like apps like Tandem, for example, that you could use, but they're not comfortable with them. And I showed in one of my videos that I actually talked to my cats in Spanish, you know, like, and I really talk to them, you know, like, of course, like it's mostly like commands, like I tell them to come, or like, but I also like go to them and tell them that I love them so much. And then I also like talk to myself, like I actually have conversations with myself, like out loud. And the other day, I was doing it, you know, like in Spanish, I think. Then I was like, maybe I should start doing this more in German, because like I feel like I've neglected my German identity a little bit since I left it in 2018, and I really would like to integrate it more into my daily life, right? And I don't really have a lot of people in Romania who speak German, but the universe, as you can see, is starting to bring people to me that I can, you know, practice with and talk about important things with, right? So like we've done this together, and I really appreciate that.
And the
And
same with Romanian for me, though. I mean, you found me, but I was also looking for ways to be more
yes.
active because since I started learning Portuguese, I felt my Romanian has got a bit neglected in a way that German wasn't, because German was already being used in my work. But the Romanian, I still read a lot and listen to it, but I haven't really been speaking as much. So yeah, that's good how these things work out. But yeah, you can, the internet opens up so many opportunities for us to find people if
Exactly.
we don't have them in our immediate surroundings.
So like at this point, I feel like whatever you would say about it, it's like an excuse, or it's just not part of your, you know, like values, like your priorities, right? Because you've probably noticed that if something is a priority, you're gonna make time for it. So it's not about time here. And it's more like, as I said, like how much you want it. Because if you do want to be, you know, like to feel confident, and let's say like, so my focus right now, because I feel like this is who I can align mostly with, right? Like it's kind of like my version from a few months ago, let's say, non-native English teachers or coaches who, no matter how many certificates they have, no matter how many courses they do, they still feel a bit less, right? In comparison to native teachers, maybe, or whatever standards they've set for themselves, right? And like, I feel like many of them are doing so much, like a lot of like invisible work, and they're underpricing their services, they're and undervaluing their work, and they feel bad, right? While giving so much to other people. And of course, like you're not happy, you're like frustrated, you feel like it's unfair. You feel like you're not really making any progress, and you don't know why. You just feel unhappy. You feel, probably a lot of them are burnt out, right? Because they work a lot. So I know how that felt, and I'm like, oh my God, now that I kind of like I've worked with myself and I've developed like some new tools and methods, I can actually help other people to kind of like work on those mental blocks, because that's what they are, you know? They're not real. They're in your head. And if you're not aware, as I was saying before, like it's very hard to work on them. So yeah, I've started like, as I said, like with my video content. So that's what I'm trying to do, like bring a bit of awareness about certain topics that are not considered as, yeah, normal, let's say. And the program that I'm focusing on right now is also like just like focused on that, right? And it's like three pillars that I'll be fo focusing on. So first of all, like linguistic mastery, because I'm sure that some non-native English teachers also like maybe feel like they lack some skills, but maybe they're ashamed to ask for help. And then we're gonna work, of course, like also like on like strategies, how to deal with this cognitive overload, because that's what happens when your brain just goes in survival mode because you're scared. There are a lot of fears and there's a lot of shame in there that you don't know where it comes from because you've never thought about it. So we would also like be working on those things, right? And then at the end, really integrating that identity and then like really learning how to just embrace it and accept it, right? Because they're never gonna be native teachers. You cannot be native if you were not born in that country, right? So and I feel like again, like this like excites me, and it's like it makes me feel like so passionate because I'm like, oh my God, like I can save other people from this pain, maybe, you know? This is kind of like my mission and my dream, so to say, at the
Yeah, I think
moment.
there's no shame in asking for help. So my audience is a bit different, but as I think we mentioned, but well, I mentioned before, I've been doing more work with translators, for example, people who are have very high levels of English, my clients, but who the people that I'm working with maybe haven't had as many opportunities to speak. So, but as you were saying about teachers asking for help, like with people who work with language, sometimes asking for help feels uncomfortable, but you're not asking for help with the thing that you're being paid to do. You're asking for help with something that is perhaps new for you because you haven't done it as much if you haven't been promoting your own services. In my case, you know, people that want to be more visible using English when they're speaking, if they haven't done that very much or in the past, then asking for help with that is very different to asking for help with the thing that you're being paid to do and that you have a lot of experience in doing. And I think one of the people who actually one of my Romanian clients who wrote on my, where did she, on LinkedIn, I think it was like, everybody needs to help, ask for help. Sometimes it's not a weakness. And she's
Yeah, but
right, you know,
it's.
because it feels uncomfortable sometimes, but when you identify a need and ask for help with it, then that is actually a very
Exactly.
proactive thing to do. It's a good thing to do because you can move past it.
But exactly, you have to identify it first, right? Because if you don't know that it's a problem that other people have, you think like, oh, I'm the only one. I'm a weirdo. I shouldn't say anything about it, maybe. Or
Especially for people with
even
more
worse.
experience.
Exactly. Or even worse, like your subconscious mind is trying to protect you from it. So it's not even going to bring it into your conscious mind for you to think that, oh, I need help
We're
with
not
my
going to go
language
there.
skills, right? Because it's like, no, I cannot admit to myself that I need help because that makes me incompetent. It means that I'm an imposter, right? So yeah, as I said, I find it fascinating. I could talk about this topic for hours,
Yeah, I
but
think we can definitely do a part two, but just to go
exactly.
back, just to something you said, just a small about animals make such good listeners. I don't have my dog anymore, but when I did, she used to listen. I used to read to her in other languages. I used to talk
Nice.
with her about my day. I mean, she was with me all the time because she was a guide dog, so she knew about my day, but I'd tell her anyway what I thought about the encounters we had and the things that happened to us, or sometimes read a book, or you know, it's and they she would just put her head on a pause and maybe go to sleep because she was just happy to be, you know, that I was speaking with her and that we were engaging. But they don't judge like people, or they don't laugh at you when you get something wrong. So animals are fantastic
Exactly. And
listeners.
they don't they can't talk back, right? That's the other part, because can you imagine your dog being like, oh my God, I've already like seen what you did today. No need to tell me
Why
anymore.
are you still talking about that colleague? They're like, I know you're annoyed about it, but seriously, I'm done with him.
Oh my God, stop complaining. I'm trying to be positive here.
I'm trying to go to the worst thing they will do is just go to sleep. But then if you sent them to sleep, it's, But yeah, thank you for your tips. I think this is fascinating. I think both as somebody working in the language teaching space, but also somebody with other language identities, I think, you know, we're all on this journey, and if we're open to really understanding ourselves better and learning more about ourselves so that we can, you know, that we can make the learning experience easy, but also that we don't sabotage ourselves, because I think some of the things that I do, some of the behaviors that aren't very smart are, if I didn't have them in my life, then life would be a lot easier. I'd have more energy for other things, because these behaviors do take energy. You know, they, if you're making yourself feel like, oh, I'm not good enough, I can't do this, like all these things, that takes energy. And what else could you do with that energy if you weren't wasting it on some of the less constructive
Yeah,
behaviors?
exactly. That's why I'm like I've realized that lately, you know, like I'm kind of like let's say I'm motivated by many things in my life right now, like, and I think a lot of it is also like a little bit related to social justice. So what I'm trying to do is I'm gonna channel, you know, like my anger and like negative energy into making something productive and good for the world. Like that's kind of like my goal, you know, because anger is very close to courage. You just need to channel it the right way, right?
Something useful, yeah.
So yeah, so that's like again like what you can do, and like when you think about it, like, oh yeah, but it's hard and I'm scared and what if, you know, like that's why you have to get into that and try to see that there's always like two sides to that story, right? There's gonna be benefits and drawbacks, but you have to see them. You have to like show your mind that they exist, because if you only focus on the negative, of course it's impossible for you to see anything else.
And the fact that we have a
So
choice as well, it's easy to kind of give our own power away and feel that we can't, but we do in most situations have a choice, and it's about making the choice that is going to be most beneficial. Okay, so I'm going to add your LinkedIn profile link to our
Okay.
podcast episodes page, and so people can go and connect with you and check out the videos and see what content you're going to be producing in the future.
Okay,
And
thank you.
so I'm going to add that. I think we've probably got more to talk about. So I'm sure if you want to, you'll be back on another episode.
I'll be
And
back.
you, yeah. Thank you for coming on the podcast. Thank you for sharing your experiences. And have a wonderful day.
Thank you so much for the invitation, and for anyone else who would like to participate, it wasn't that scary after all. So thank you so much for making this a safe
I
space
don't bite.
and for not biting. Yes. Thank you,
The wolf
Kirsty.
doesn't bite. Well, the wolf does bite, but not podcast
Not
guests.
this wolf.
No. Not this situation.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the English with Kirsty podcast. If you have any questions or comments, my email address is kirsty@englishwithkirsty.com, or you can go to www.englishwithkirsty.com/podcast, where you'll find information about the individual episodes.